Well, this morning's title looks strangely religious, which has probably kept 20 people at home today watching football. And I guess I mean it to be religious and spiritual in, I think, the very deepest sense. In a way, I stole the title. I'm sorry, in my business we call it recycling. Clergy were green before green was in terms of recycling material, from a very famous Theodore Parker sermon called Transitory and Permanent in Christianity. I want to talk about the transitory experiences and what is permanent and what is real and what is nourishing, and I don't see them as being diametrically opposed. When I look around and I ask the deep personal and religious questions, the first one that comes to mind is not about the existence of God or non-existence of God or another world or another life. It is about what is spiritually nourishing in my life. What is it that feeds my soul, that gives me the energy to get up in the morning, to face a chaotic world, to be involved in this whole process of living, of connecting, of building houses of cards and seeing them blown away in the wind after you just got them balanced for that microsecond? When I was younger, maybe even younger, there was a bumper sticker I remember seeing, and it said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." Well, I knew whatever my development of spiritual maturity at the time was that there was something deeply wrong with that. As Ecclesiastes said, you just can't carry your gold and your wisdom and all of these things into the grave. So winning, if we want to even use that metaphor, is not about dying with the most things, with the biggest bank accounts, with the most expensive art, with the biggest house. It's always interesting to me when I watch the news that when a rich person dies, they tell you the value of the house. Like, found dead in his $3 million mansion, when $3 million mansions were more than 3,000 square feet, found dead, and it's like this irony. If you're rich, somehow you shouldn't be found dead anywhere. Because the other side of that story is, and he was killed senselessly for only $5. If it had been $500, it would have been a sensible killing. What is the relationship between this money and meaning? And I want to tell you, none. There is nothing that I have, nothing that I ever desired, and when I say nothing, I mean no thing that I own, that I ever wanted or lusted for and acquired, that has the slightest bit of importance to me, intrinsically or extrinsically. Now, those of you who know me know that I am not exactly a hair shirt practicer of asceticism. I mean, if I wear a hair shirt, it's woven out of the hair of a llama, you know. That's with two L's. The Dalai Lama was not injured in the production of any of my garments. I like nice things. I like to have a nice car. I even like it when it's clean. I like to live in a nice house. I like good restaurants. I like fine wine. And none of it is important. The error to me is not in terms of those things and having them. It is believing somehow that their price transfers into value and that status symbols become status for an individual. None of the things that I have or have ever had is important. In the 60s, there was a movement, Fritz Perls had a lot to do with it, about peak experiences. And by definition, I love peak experiences, those unusual moments where we just are transformed, where we are lifted up, where we feel a sense of connection, a first kiss, a first love, a baby's first steps, being on a mountaintop and being caught up in a storm, or watching a sunset and actually getting that flash at the end of the sunset. Those unforgettable moments. I have had many unforgettable moments, but I'm not going to list all of them this morning. But they are looking at my son take his first steps, looking at my wife's eyes as we stood at our wedding ceremony, hearing Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto in D played for the first time and having tears flow from me, being moved, being transformed by these special moments. And they're wonderful. They are not at odds with the regular moments, the ordinary and everyday mundane life that we live from day to day. I don't find them at war with each other at all. They are instructive and informative about how can we be in the world and see the everyday miracles of which we are a part. How can we look at those things that we take so for granted and understand what they mean, what it is to be for a moment alive, what it is to be for a moment free of pain or disease, what it is to have air that, because of wind, is relatively clean except for the pollen, and to give thanks for the pollen also, because without pollinating, where would we be? And where would the makers of antihistamines be? To one of the pietistic leitmotifs that comes up whenever I'm involved in teaching comparative religion is that often religions get caught up in a tension between this world and a spiritual world, between the transient, which is seen as inferior because things fall apart, they decay. The most precious object I have at some point is going to end up in the garage. When I walk through my garage, it is a chastening and humbling experience because much of the stuff in unsorted boxes piled up to the ceiling is stuff that once upon a time I thought I wanted, I thought I needed. And now I walk through the garage carefully, not to trip over all of the boxes of once important stuff, and realize I'm never going to see that stuff again. That's going to be for my heirs and legatees to either go through or just throw out. Things lose their shine, their importance, their status, and it is the everyday where we live. I don't turn away from peak experiences, but peak experiences are beginnings. They may be the anomalies that call our attention to look at things. It came up, I think, either last week or 2 weeks ago about the nature of memory. You know, human beings see ourselves related to technology. So we saw ourselves in bardic traditions. We saw memory only a generation ago as like a record, and then it was like a tape. And we know what happens to both records and tapes as they degrade. Memory is clearly a DVD because it's random access. We can go and visit experiences and peak experiences and slogging through the day experiences, and they're all a part of our lives, important parts of our lives, because it is those moments that create the continuity of our lives. And I have found out, I've been informed by my wife from time to time, that my DVD recorder is not perfect, that sometimes it records something that didn't happen, and sometimes it erases things that happen, and sometimes it mixes and merges, and there's an edit program that's going on somewhere, but it's real to me and I see it, and it's where life is. This morning, I hate the cliche of ministers saying, this morning on my way to church, this morning on my way out of the house, there was a little blue cheap plastic knife sitting on a counter, and I have no idea what it was doing there. But I looked at it, and I realized it was the knife that was from the food service on the Air France plane where my wife and I flew to France on our honeymoon. That little object, kind of like Proust's Madeleine, triggered all kinds of memory. And if you look at my notes, you'll see this wasn't in the typed part. This was in the really happened this today part. And I looked at that little giveaway knife, shows you how long it's been when they were passing out real knives made out of almost metal on airplanes and served almost food on airplanes. And it triggered the wedding, the honeymoon, the trip, my fear of flying, the smoke filled, because it was when you could smoke, and we were on a up against a wall with a screaming baby and smokers, and you know, it was an interesting experience of life, of great anticipation, of annoyance, of inconvenience, of anticipation, of life. And all of those memories came out of one single object. That object is as valuable to me as the most expensive hand-forged steak knife sitting in a drawer somewhere, because its importance is not intrinsic to the object. Its importance is what it means to me. The experiences that it triggers, that it recalls, that it replays of my life, which is where the nourishment is. Pietistic movements often try to withdraw from life and find sanctity in the ordinary apart from the distractions of civilization. That happens in Judaism, in Christianity, in monastic orders, and in Islam, in some monastic movements within Islam. Certainly happens in Hinduism and in Buddhism. But one of the very most moving pieces of theater from my childhood that I remember is Our Town. And as corny as it may seem at times, the scene where the girl comes back from death visiting her house and is trying to shout to the people, look around you. Look, appreciate today. Appreciate each other. Appreciate the sunlight while it's shining. Appreciate the night when it's dark, of waking, of sleeping, of, not her words, not Thornton Wilder's words, but try to sanctify the individual moments of our lives because it's where we live. Peak experiences are wonderful. I love almost all of the peak experiences of my life, all of the trials, all of the errors, all of the things that at the moment just seemed explosively indelible. But if they are isolated, they have very little meaning. I don't want to forget Aaron's pictures at an exhibition. If he played that was another one of those triggers. I remember being in Kiev and standing in front of the great gates of Kiev and singing at the top of my lungs my version of the great gates of Kiev from Mussorgsky, and that triggered all of those memories I had of the Soviet Union back then, that music and scent and objects, all of those are aide-mémoires. They are things that bring us into contact with the continuity of our lives. The peak experiences that we transform into part of our lives. If I had only heard the piece of music once and it was gone, if a first kiss had not been followed by a second kiss, if waiting to watch my son take his first steps, I had then disconnected after that peak experience, it would have meant nothing. What it means is to take those experiences and to move them into a way that they inform our lives at our very core, so that I learn how to be husband, lover, parent, not just watching a first step or beholding a birth, but parent every day from birth till my death. That I learn to be a grandparent, and I had a peak experience last night communing for at least an hour with youngest grandson Will and looking into his eyes and into all of the wonder that we sang about in the second hymn today. All of that wonder, that's the stuff that warms and nourishes and gives us the energy and the courage to be a part of a world, to be a part of each other's lives, and to be in touch with what is important and nourishing in our own lives, and then to be able to share some and substance with one another.